Zesty Garden, and I have a special guest this morning. I'm talking with Jan Brett, who's author of so many wonderful books that you may or probably already have in your own library, like Christmas Trolls, There's the Mitten, and now you're on tour with The Turnip.
With The Turnip. That's my new one. It's a Russian folktale that many librarians will be familiar with, but I put a new twist in mine, which is... Shall I tell?
I like the twist.
You like the twist? Okay, so I do borders in my books. It's when I have too many ideas, and then I just put them in the borders, and sometimes you can see who's coming next in the borders. Well, in the story, they find a giant turnip in the garden, and then everyone tries to pull it up, but they're not able to. The discoverer is a little girl, and then she asks her brother, her mother, her father, and various animals, including a hedgehog. They can't pull it up. Meanwhile, there's a rooster who's escaped from a neighboring farm. He's escaped from the cooking pot. He's watching the action. But being a rooster, he's a little bit cocky and sure of himself, and he says, oh, I can pull up the turnip all by himself. So he grasps the turnip top with his little beak and starts to pull. And at the same time, I have foreshadowed this whole scenario of a mother bear going to down to her den for her winter hibernation with her two cubs. You see them brushing their teeth and getting a story and getting in their pajamas. And as they go down into the den, you turn the page, and what is in their bed but the giant turnip? This is from underground. You see the great big root of it right where, and it's a beautiful, beautiful turnip. It's purple on the top, yellow on the bottom. So they see this and, oh, how can we go to sleep for the winter? So Mother Bear gets her foot out just as upstairs in the ground. You see the turnip top, and there's a little rooster. Kaboom! The whole turnip goes up in the air, and the rooster is hanging on for dear life, and everyone thinks he has pulled up the turnip.
And of course, he becomes the hero.
He's the hero, and he gets a new home, because the badger family, they are the ones who are the farmers in the story. The father badger says, well, when could we find a helpful fellow like this again? So please come and live with us, he says. Hedgehogs are my totem animal. I love them. They're European, but it's something about that little nose that kind of turns up. They dig under leaves and things for bugs. And then because of their prickles, they don't have to run away or scratch. So people see them, even though they're wild animals, they may, you know, congregate around people's houses and get, you know, little scraps of food and things like that.
And it's the hedgehog that eventually... Is it that gets everyone to come out of, in your other book, The Mitten?
Yes. Well, the hedgehog is in all of my books, but especially the hat where he gets a sock stuck in his head because he gets into it. It falls off the clothesline, and he has to pretend it's a hat so that other animals don't tease him. And then finally, the little girl rescues her sock. It was her woolens that were out there airing. And so that's a happy ending for that one. And The Mitten... All the animals get inside, and a bear comes in, the very last animal, and then, oh no, the last animal is a mouse, gets onto the bear's nose. The bear feels that scoochy scratchy of the claws and sneezes, and then all the animals get catapulted out of the mitten. The mitten goes up in the sky, and Nicky, the little boy who has lost his mitten, sees it.
You illustrate your books as well.
Yes. Ever since I was in kindergarten, I wanted to be a children's book illustrator. You may know someone like that yourself that loves to color and draw, and I was really shy. Nothing ever came out right when I tried to talk. But then when I drew a picture, it was almost like I could create this world, and I was something inside was happy. And so I have to keep doing it. So everyone says to me, you know, how long are you going to keep doing books? And as long as I can, as long as I can see and can hold a pencil, I will be drawing books.
So why a turnip? It's not exactly what I would think would be the subject of a book.
That's why it's the perfect subject, because it's the giant turnip. I guess because it's a Russian folktale. And I guess the idea of a huge, giant vegetable has some appeal. And as I've been on the book tour and talked about it being a Russian folktale, various people have said, well, I'm Chinese. We had this as a Chinese folktale. And a Romanian woman said, this is not a Russian folktale. This is a Romanian folktale. So I guess it spread. Because I like to tell the children that a folktale, I define a folktale, it's one of those stories that you love so much that you tell it to your children. Then your children love it, and they remember it. When they grow up and have their children, they tell it. And it goes down the generations, each person embellishing it a little bit. So that it gets better and better.
How did you find out about this tale?
I spent a lot of time in libraries, and especially when I was a little girl. We had a library down the street. We used to ride our bikes. We could put six books on one side of our, you know, the saddlebags you used to have, six on the other, 12 was the limit, and we would just take out zillions of books. And I love folk tales because I love the influence of the foreign countries, because it would be tales from Japan, tales from Russia, tales from Germany, the Scandinavian ones, and I just thought they were very interesting.
So it's kind of like Cinderella. I've noticed that there's a tale of Cinderella in almost all cultures. My daughter was just in Cambodia, and there's something along the lines of Cinderella in Cambodia as well.
Yeah. So must be something very basic about some of these stories that cross all these cultural lines that is very key to our human spirit. Possible?
I think you're right. So I'm imagining you have a whole list of books that you could write based on tales like this. So why did the turnip one appeal to you the most?
I think that colors of the turnip, I mean, it's kind of a pinky magenta-y purple, and that yellow is such a dramatic color combination. And I mean, anybody who goes to a fresh market, you just can't help but be bowled over by the beautiful colors that you see with the bright green greens and the oranges of the carrots and the tomatoes. And I mean, look, we describe so many colors by describing fruits and vegetables. You know, it's like a color of corn, you know, new corn, or it's leafy green, or they just are so beautiful. Those pigments are so rich. And so...
So you're looking at it from not only the cultural end of things, you're looking at it like, how can I illustrate this as well?
Absolutely. I would say that's what really drives me, is the colorfulness of it. And then also I was able to go to Russia and do, you know, grueling research. We had to go to museums and eat Russian food and take hot steam baths called banyas, and had all these adventures. We went to this town. It was the ancient capital of Russia, called Novgorod. And the architecture is very beautiful. It's somewhat like our Victorian architecture, where there's like little zigzags and curlicues carved in the wood, and then it goes around the doorways, on the gables, between floors, around the windows. And this was, think of that, but then multiply it by 3-4 layers, but all gray, all wood with no paint. So then it would turn this lovely weathered gray color. And then you top it off with the onion dome, which I don't know why they're not called turnip domes, because they look more like turnips to me.
So when you're doing research, and I've heard that you do intensive research in your books. Normally you would think, okay, for a children's book, you don't have to do very much. But really, when you're illustrating, you're telling a story with what you're drawing, as well as what the printed word is.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just like food. When you go to a different country, if you go to Mexico and they put chocolate in the savory things, and when you go to a different country, it kind of sparks different ways of seeing color. Like when we went to Martinique, I set my book Owl and the Pussycat there. It was actually written by Edward Lear, but I did the illustrations. And the colors of the jungle, the blue ocean, and then all those boats and houses with all these contrasting bright colors. Colors you wouldn't expect. It was wonderful. You know, it just made me feel like, wow, for school's out, I can put anything I want in this book. And then when we went to the Arctic, this is an interesting one, because there, we were in Baffin Island. It's winter pretty much every month, except for 3 weeks is summer. That's their summer. And the colors of the ocean against the ice, the greens, emerald greens and blues and turquoise, and the glaciers would be all these lovely colors. And then when the sun hit them, all these pinks and everything, but the white and then all the fur that the Inuit people would wear, especially in the olden days. Now, they sometimes will use a regular cloth that we might get at North Face or whatever the big ski place might be that sells high-tech fabric, but they still use the fur because it's really the only thing that will keep them warm, and seal skin and so forth. And those browns and grays, and they would use different furs for different times of the year. And so I was able to make that book all these shades of gray and brown, and then the shades of the blue and the green. And that was really exciting to me, because I wouldn't have come up with that in Boston, Massachusetts. I had to go to Baffin Island to get to get those idea of just like editing, you know, editing it down to those two color groups.
When you first step off the plane into a new country, what's coming to your eyes first?
You know, when I first come, I almost contract, because I don't know, you feel like a stranger, and then you just kind of open up. Now, when we've gone to Africa, it was also like, am I going to do the right thing? Because there you're constantly being told, if you see an elephant, don't run. You're supposed to just kind of ease back into the where you can be safe. But, you know, a lot of the prey animals will see a running figure, and all they'll say is, oh, that's something to eat if it's running. So you're told never to run. So it takes me a little while, I think. I mean, that's why it's usually good to go for a couple of weeks.
So you can just sit back and observe?
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny. The books are visual, but when I'm making them up, I'm smelling the smells, I'm feeling the wind or the heat or the cold and all the different sounds. Like, the best thing about Africa was the morning chorus. Just as the sun goes up, you're hearing the lions roaring from the night's kill. You know, over their kill, they roar. First time I heard it, I thought it was a train. I said, Joe, I hear a train. That's my husband. He goes, Jan, we're a million miles from anywhere. That's not a train. What could it be? And we asked our guy. He says, oh, those were the lions. They had a kill, you know, X amount of miles away. And then the birds start, and then hyenas. And it's called the morning chorus. It is exactly like a symphony. Hippos. The bird life is amazing. They all each have their own little specialty.
So, well, with the turnip, do you like turnips?
I love turnips. We always have them on special occasions, and occasionally another time. My mother was quite a good cook, and she was very good about making us homemade meals. I have to admit, we often would have them with a little honey or brown sugar, but not always. And then I was the one who, because of the book, wanted to do the pancakes, because the last page, that's the payoff. They all get turnip pancakes. And I had to make them. And so I just took a potato recipe from Joy of Cooking, my old standby, and put half turnips in it. But I still followed all the rules of, like, you squeeze the moisture out of the grated turnip and potato and let it sit for a little while before adding the three eggs. And I have my own chicken, so I was able to use their eggs, which always makes me happy. They're very tasty. And then I think there's a tablespoon of flour, salt and pepper, and my secret ingredient was just a little grind of nutmeg. You know, with the fresh nutmeg? That was my secret ingredient. And then brown in butter, which is in the book. I put a little olive oil, too. And then Joe and I had them as a savory dish. We had them with smoked salmon, creme fraiche, and capers. And then when our grandkids come, they have them with applesauce.
How do you continue to do book after book and remain inspired? I'm sure part of it is traveling and seeing everything that's around you.
You know, that's such an intuitive question, because, you know, for me, it's the opposite. If I don't draw, I get this, like, worthless, flabby feeling. I feel like, oh, my gosh, my life is going by, and I'm not using... It's not that I feel like I'm terribly gifted, but I feel like this is some kind of magic thing that's been given to me to be able to communicate. And I love being in touch with my six-year-old self, which is that kind of person that gets up on Saturday morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, shakes your parents, can I get up? Can I go outside? Can I do this? Can we go here? And they go, and your parents roll over, and they go, well, how about we have breakfast first? And, you know, it's that feeling and discovery, just going out in the backyard and seeing, you know, I loved flowers, and we had these big fields in the back, and it was just every week in the spring and summer there would be something new that was going on back there that we'd go. We had a little apple orchard that was from the olden days, so it was kind of falling down, and different animals would come from the woods. They still do. We have even more animals now than we used to when I was growing up.
Well, you definitely have an eye for detail. How were you influenced growing up to pay attention to things so you can see that detail?
That's a really good question. I think two things. One was we were told to go not watch TV. We just had to go outside, or we could draw. We were given art materials, not lessons, but we had a lot of time. And I had this best friend, Marla, and we just drew. We loved horses, but we neither of us could have a horse. So we drew our horses, and we gave them saddles and blankets and names and stalls, which we all drew and cut out. And it was just a world that we created. And she was a much better artist than me. So I always was playing catch-up to her art because she was such a good... So I was just really lucky to have this best friend. That was one thing. And what was the other thing I was going to say about the detail? I know we were read to a lot, and my favorite author was Beatrix Potter. And the books that I loved had all the detail, because I can remember, like, it was the Roly-Poly Pudding, and John Joyner was a carpenter, and he was up on the slates of the roof. And I, what are slates? But you could almost feel the heat coming off of them, you know, from her drawings. And all the little squirrels would have little tassels on their ears. We don't have that in New England. I go, look at those tassels on their ears. And then I remember I had this book, wonderful book about the Arabian Nights. And of course, I loved horses. And it had an Arab horse on the cover with this man on it with a turban and a jewel. And the illustrator had made a little rip in the satin of the covering on the horse's back, as if he had been in some sort of scrape, either a battle or been through some big woods or something. And I thought, wow, you know, just by that little detail you could tell the story has already started. And then, you know, an Arab horse has more of a dished-in face in its skull. And so I said, I knew what an Arab horse was. I said, if it's Arabian Nights, Arab horse. And it was like a light bulb. So after that, I tried to always match up everything. Like in this book, it's a European badger because it's set in Russia. So we have a North American badger, has more of a pointy nose. But the European badger has more of a clown-like nose.
So we just need to be aware when we're looking at the book, if we think, oh, that doesn't quite look like a badger. Well, it does look like a badger. It's just not a North American badger.
It's a European badger, yeah. So I just always love the kind of puzzle aspect of it. And I think children naturally do that. They love to learn new words. They love to learn about other countries. They love to learn about animals and the world around them. And it's only when I think we get older that we kind of get stressed and we don't have that openness about our ability to absorb.
What would you suggest for parents with their kids today? I know when I was growing up, Atari was just coming out. Uh-huh. But nowadays, I see my son, he wants to be on the iPad, and we're constantly, we have a TV downstairs, but we never watch it.
Yeah.
So it's, and his best friend lives next door, and they like to go out and explore. But even the electronics are still kind of alluring. What would you suggest to get kids outside so that they are exploring and looking for that kind of detail?
Now, I'm really in a position now. You know, I have a granddaughter. You know, my daughter's all grown up, so I've had my chance with her. But we just plan a lot of outdoor activities. We go for a lot of walks. We go for a lot of hikes. We go out and feed the chickens. We just have a lot of activities. And I think her parents don't have every single hour of her life planned, so she has time to just go out and explore and have that kind of dead time where you have to ask yourself, what should I do? And I think that is kind of gets our imagination going a little bit, where it's not all given to us in a silver platter of like, oh, this is your uniform and this is where you're going to play today, that kind of thing. I mean, some of that is great. I mean, it's good to stay fit by being an athlete and being on a team or taking lessons. But I guess it's a little balance. I think every parent like knows when they see their kids, you know, what they should do. But, you know, the human spirit is a lovely thing. And I think that no matter if it's electronics or books or it's whatever one's creative mode is, that the human spirit will prevail no matter what, and that we'll have human beings that are curious and knowledgeable and want to share that knowledge and love.
Well, I'm talking with Jan Brett. She's author of her new book is The Turnip. You may know her from The Mitten or Christmas Trolls. And she's in Logan, Utah, and actually traveling through Utah. I think you were in Salt Lake a little earlier, and you're headed to St. George. And why don't you tell me about the tour?
The best part of the tour is a lot of the children will bring me their drawings. And they're so great. They're unedited. You know, there's no one saying, oh, the nose is too big or whatever. And they're so expressive. I love them. And I always say, you know, that's better than I can do. And they look at me like in disbelief, like, no, it's not. And I'm like, yes, it is. It's fantastic. And a lot of the children do want to be artists when they grow up. And they all love their books. And I would say that they're not unsung heroes, because everybody loves our teachers, but the teachers do such a great job having children that may not have books at home or may not have that time to draw. They make that time in school. It's wonderful.
I would say probably, as a parent, for me, the best thing that we could have done with our kids was to read. And our daughter's now 21. Our son is now 13, but he'll still climb into my lap and we'll just pull out a book, even though he could easily read it on his own.
You know, there's so many wonderful ways to enjoy books. My daughter had a really hard time learning to read, which I did not. It was easy for me, and it was hard for me to accept that. But we just had books everywhere. You know, big coffee table books on owls, on, you know, traveling or underwater. And so she just liked the idea of just opening a book and seeing something cool. But then every night we read together. So it was way beyond her reading level, but it was at her comprehension level. So it's a wonderful way to introduce children to new ideas, especially if they aren't able to decode an actual book to read to them. It's great to see what they're interested in and what they ask for over and over again. And it's a great way for me, because I read to her when she was in ninth grade. We didn't tell all our friends that, because it sounds babyish. But we did. We read Gone with the Wind and some books that had touched on adult subjects. And it was a great time for me to be able to tell what I thought about certain things without me having to, you know, say, I think you should do this. Instead, I'd be sympathizing with one of the characters, or, you know, maybe there would be subjects that might be difficult, death, or like the Little House on the Prairie books with the big winter, I think it was, when they were, you know, practically starving and they had to struggle through this very, very cold winter and all had to help each other, and then the neighbors that had the corn that they lent them, and, you know, just all those like small little lessons that make up the fabric of life, but you're getting to steal them from other cultures and other situations and other families that you might not have yourself. And that just kind of frame of reference, I think, is a wonderful way for a child to grow up, having that frame of reference.
I want to change the subject here a little bit and ask you about the tour itself. How do you keep up your energy going from town to town? This is, how many books have you authored?
I don't know. Oh, you mean how many books have I actually written and illustrated? It's around 36.
Is that 36 tours that you've been on?
Well, yeah, we've been on a lot of book tours. And, you know, what it is all year long I'm by myself. Our kids are grown up, and I have my husband, which we always chat and everything, but it's like being in a bubble. I mean, I surround myself with things that have to do with the book, and I'm just in this bubble. And I do other things, but mostly that's what I do, and like not going to an office. And then to come out and meet people that like the books, it's so heartwarming, and I'm almost in disbelief, and someone will know all the characters and quote from them. And like there's this one book, The Trouble with Trolls, and so the little girl has her dog, and she's going up the mountain, and the trolls try to take the dog away. They want a pet. And they go, "I want dog." And they, some family said, "Oh, we always have that, I want dog." And they talk like the trolls. And it's very cute.
I have to tell you, that was one of my favorite books always to read to my kids, because I like to do voices. And the troll sounded like this. And so I would change my voice and go around. So your books are very easy to do that with and to have fun while you're reading.
They are very fun. I love, my grandfather used to be a great reader out loud. And my father, too, would always do the voices of the three bears. And when we got to the great gruff voice of the father bear, then we would be like, we'd pretend to be scared. And, of course, it would be an excuse to stay up another half an hour because we would have to be calmed down after that.
Well, the last thing I wanted to ask you about has not really anything too related to the turnip, other than the hero, supposed hero of the book, is a rooster.
Yeah.
I am sitting here in on your bus,
yeah,
and there are two banties right behind me.
Yes, it's
and
Ruben.
You love chickens, I understand.
I love chickens. I was always a horse person. Well, I had chickens when I was little. And then I always loved horses and had horses for years. And then we traveled so much, it was very difficult to keep a horse and keep in shape for my riding. So I started running and I started raising chickens. And now I have about 150. And I go all over the country going to chicken poultry shows. And the best thing about poultry shows is just so much darn fun at these shows. We're very competitive, and there are all these beautiful breeds. There's like 72 breeds of large fowl and bantams, and then, of course, you have ducks and turkeys. And I have friends all over the country. And so I have this little pair, our Dutch, light brown Dutch, and they look just like the one in the book because I copied him. And he was given to me by a breeder of Dutch chickens. Is the smallest of the bantams, which I thought would be good because it kind of emphasizes the fact this little teeny rooster pulls up the giant turnip. But I have the white-crested Polish chickens.
Oh, I love those.
You
I love
do?
Those. I used to have some white-crested Polish. Now I have Dominiques and a golden Campine. I'm not one of these people that raises chickens to eat necessarily. I like to have a little variety,
yeah,
in my flock, and I like the different colored eggs, and so I understand your appreciation for
and
chickens.
They make great in addition to your garden. Mm. So you know, you have to keep the manure so that it will season. Is that the word you would use?
They would compost.
Yeah, they would compost it. Yeah, so we have a compost, and I use the chicken cleanup from the chicken coops. And my chickens do have a very nice area that they live in. We have a lot of predators. Mm. So they need a roof. The Polish have this big, huge picture, a black chicken with shiny iridescent feathers, almost bottle green, and then a great big white softball size poof of white instead of a comb. Almost obscures their eyes. So they cannot be rained on.
It's like a little top hat.
It's like a top. Some people call them top hatters. But they're very sweet. All my roosters are really nice, and my Dutch rooster is really nice.
Well, Ms. Brett, thank you very much.
You are very welcome.
You've been listening to The Zesty Garden. My guest has been Jan Brett, and she's here in Logan on a book tour for her latest book. It's called The Turnip, and it's from Putnam, and I hope that you'll take a gander at it because it's just wonderful. The illustrations are great. The story is nice, and if you want a good book to sit with whomever to read, this will be one of those.